let's practice together this preciousness of pausing midweek, midday, in the middle of this moment right here. Practicing arriving. We often skim across the surface of moments or slide right through them without really making full contact. And this practice is an opportunity to slow down, to settle in, to savor. To savor this gift of being alive. So one dimension of slowing is that we still the body and find a body posture that allows for a measure of steadiness for a period of time. That offers support. So that there might be some portion of ease, of relaxing in the body, a letting go of efforting, while simultaneously inviting a wakefulness. Another dimension of the slowing down is a simplification, a softening of the gaze or a closing of the eyes that limits or lets go of visual stimulation. The visual realm often pulls us more deeply into the mental realm. So letting go of this sense gate opens up space to know the experience of the body more fully. To begin to know the spaces in our practice. Maybe allows a turning toward the sense gate of hearing for a few moments. There's more simplicity for most of us in sounds than in sight. So you might rest back and receive the experience of hearing. Sounds arising, maybe persisting for a period of time, and then the disappearance of a sound. and the greater degree of simplicity and hearing also often opens up the possibility of noticing the spaces between sounds. Sometimes the spaces are experienced as silence, emptiness, sometimes a fullness in the space. Often a restfulness in simply receiving the arising and passing of sounds. And a restfulness in the spaces between sounds. You might let yourself gather your awareness toward the breath. Check in with this familiar touch point that we often connect with and practice. Rather than going in search of the breath, seeing what it's like to rest back and receive the breath. To let the breath wash over or through you. Feeling the gentle rise of the inhalation, and the gentle lull of the exhalation. the arising and dissolving of each breath. You might even notice the slight pause or space, however momentary, between breaths. And choosing for yourself the touch point that's most stabilizing for you today. Perhaps it's the breath. Maybe it's opening back out and receiving sounds. Maybe there's another touch point you regularly work with. Trusting your own wisdom to help you identify how to practice. How to meet the conditions of your mind and your body as they're expressing in this moment. So that when you find yourself entangled with experience, an unpleasant sensation in the body, a pleasant daydream, or bubbling of changing emotions that you know where to return to have a consistent touch point. A compass bearing that points you back towards presence. as we come into the final minutes of our practice today, just noticing where your awareness is with your touch point, with the spaces between sounds or breaths. Perhaps with one of the objects that pulls attention in a different direction, and without judgment, just noticing where the awareness is. Coming home to your touch point. Once again, celebrating this capacity to always begin anew. To celebrate that the present moment is always available. We can never misplace it. And perhaps reflecting on how this capacity for presence this capacity for slowing down to be in relationship with the moment might support being in relationship with others and with the wider world. And that when we truly see the world, connect with it, hear it, feel it, we can care about it. And we can contribute that care in the service of a world where all beings might know a measure of safety, ease, peace, and freedom. Lovely to be able to continue with you today. You know, this journey we've been on for several years now. Who knew at the beginning this would be such a long and winding road that we're on, but so it is with the adventure of life. And, you know, we've been exploring all these different per- perspectives and practices that help us connect with, care about this life, you know, our own hearts, the hearts of others, the wider heart of the world. And last week I introduced one of the short lists in Buddhism. Some of them are quite long. This one is short, but substantial, shall we say. And it's the three characteristics, sometimes called the three marks of existence. It's these three dimensions of any experience to varying degrees, that, and it's another way of understanding, as I said last week, like where we get hooked, where we get entangled, where we often end up struggling. And just to name the three again, and then we're going to take a deeper dive into each one starting today with the first. So they're in Pali, they're known as dukkha, anicca, and anatta. Dukkha is the word that's often translated as suffering. Anicca, impermanence. Anatta, this idea of no unique, kind of enduring self. And I wanted to explore and unpack dukkha just a little bit today. Suffering, you know, we hear about suffering a lot in meditation. And, you know, often there's this sense that meditative practice, particularly Buddhism, is all about suffering. And it's actually just half of the story. It's really about, you know, the Buddha repeatedly said, what I teach is suffering and the end of suffering. Sometimes we miss that second part. It's really about understanding suffering to understand how can we experience freedom from it. And, you know, it's really about, this practice invites us to witness, to acknowledge, to explore, you know, the truth or the reality that difficulty, suffering, pain is part of being human. So it's not a mistake, it's just part of this incarnation. And dukkha has many translations. Suffering is one of the most common, but I actually like some of the others better. It is sometimes known as unsatisfactoriness, unreliability, and sometimes simply as stress. You know, it's really pointing us to, we typically hang our hat on something that is not going to ultimately be satisfying in a lasting way, that we can really lean into or stand on. It's like we're reaching for our well-being in the wrong places. Is part of what this teaching points us to. And there's no one translation that really fully captures it. I found this great quote that puts it this way. I appreciated this. It said, "No single English word adequately captures the full depth, range, and subtlety of the crucial Pali term dukkha. Over the years, many translations of the word have been used, and I've shared some of those with you. And he says, each has its own merits in a given context. There is value in also not letting oneself get too comfortable with any one particular translation of the word, since the entire thrust of Buddhist practice is the broadening and deepening of one's understanding of dukkha, until its roots are finally exposed and eradicated once and for all. So it's like, really, it's this journey of understanding this experience of suffering. And he finishes up by saying, one helpful rule of thumb, as soon as you think you've found the single best translation for the word, think again. For no matter how you describe dukkha, it's always deeper, subtler, and more unsatisfactory than that. So even as we're talking about it, this is another one of those moments where words are a little bit like the finger pointing at the moon. You know, it's like the finger's not the moon, the word moon is not the moon, but we're being guided in a direction of to point our curiosity. And one way of unpacking this that's often helpful is they talk about different flavors or types of dukkha or suffering, and this might help us in our exploration. So I'll offer the three most common flavors that are talked about. I'll share the Pali. You don't have to remember any of this, but sometimes people just like to know. The first one I appreciate, and it always kind of makes me giggle, they just call dukkha dukkha. They just sort of like give you a double scoop. It's like ice cream, you know. Here's just a double scoop, dukkha dukkha. And this is the flavor of stress that is just related, really, kind of to the discomfort of living a human life, like unpleasant experience, sensations. It could be discomfort in the body. It could be like, you know, eating something and being like, oh, yuck, I hate the taste of that. It could be construction noise. You know, it's all that sensory input that's just not pleasant to be with. Which really points us to, you know, that's just part of life, but we, you know, it points us to the way that often we're at war with that. So it adds in the struggle. A second flavor is known as Sankara Dukkha. And this relates to stressful mental activity. So this is another source of difficulty, distress, unsatisfactoriness in being human. It's like all of the spinning of the mind, the stories, the worries, the trying to control things. So our minds are a source of suffering often. And the last one, I always have to look at this one because my tongue gets a little tied around it. Viparani Nama Dukkha, which is pointing to impermanence. So it's the suffering of change. The fact that we want pleasant things to stay the same, to last. We want the unpleasant stuff to hurry up and change faster. You know, it's like that flavor of unreliability, that idea that, you know, we want to lean on life like it's a wall and it's a waterfall. You know, there's no stability in life. It's, things are always moving. They're changing. They're different. You know, so there's this whole range. I'll share one other famous description of what dukkha is, which kind of covers it. I think you'll see. It says, birth is dukkha, aging is dukkha, death is dukkha, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are dukkha. Association with the unbeloved is dukkha. Separation from the loved is dukkha. Not getting what is wanted is dukkha. You know, so it's really pointing to, you don't get to escape it, right? If you're born, you experience it. If you age, you experience it. Dying is not for the faint of heart. You experience it. You know, there's grief, there's despair, there's pain. And then there's this, you know, getting what you don't want, not getting what you wanted, you know, having what you want and having it disappear. So there's all these ways that it shows up. And what's really helpful in just bringing this in as a framework is that we just start to be curious about it. Like, what flavor of, you know, suffering is here? And often it's related to something in embodied life, something in mental life, or something related to wanting things to stay the same or to be different than they are. And I might just let that be our postcard on dukkha today and see what speaks to you in this. You know, maybe there's a way that you, you know, resonate with this, even a label, you know, that fits for you. Some people like just, oh, you know, dukkha, because it's a basket that contains all of this, and they use a little post-it when they are just, you know, finding that they're really suffering, really struggling, and it's like, oh, dukkha, you know, just to kind of loosen the knot a little bit. Sometimes people really resonate with that term, suffering, or they really like naming it as stress, or this is unreliable, you know. So maybe there's a way that you name or identify this. Maybe there's a particular flavor that's your companion of struggle or suffering. So I'll let you have a little time with each other. And then we can come back. All right, let's see. Okay, enjoy each other, and I'll see you soon. Welcome back, friends. I'll see if there's any collective wisdom that wants to be shared from what you explored together. Please, Julie. Thank you. It sounds juicy. Yeah, that's a beautiful question. I love that inquiry. And I just had like three things co arise. So in this case, the invitation today is bringing curiosity to like what's this mind and heart's and body's experience with suffering. And there is this bridge, because when we understand something about it here, it actually helps us meet the suffering in others, I find, you know, because it often provides a gateway into compassion and feeling like the common humanity of, oh, I've known grief. I might not have known your grief, or I've known that tension of like wanting something and not getting it, or I've known the pain of impermanence. And yes, the other piece in there, and maybe this will be a topic we pick up after this, is the medicine of what's sometimes another list known as the Four Noble Truths of, you know, it's essentially like, you know, there is suffering, there's a cause for suffering, there is the ending of suffering, and there's a path that helps us get out of suffering. And so it's a little bit like the doctor's diagnosis, and prescription. You know, so it's really like the medicine for, okay, what do we do with this? We don't want to just like see it and marinate in it, but we want to like work with it skillfully to find more freedom. So yeah, I really appreciate you bringing that in. Does that resonate at all with what you were asking, David? Okay, good. So maybe I'll just close with a short poem, which is kind of in the spirit of what you're pointing to, David, which is why hang out with this suffering stuff? And so I thought I'd end with a poem that shows what might become available to us when we're not, seeking reliability or satisfaction where we often do. So this is a poem by Holly Hughes entitled Mind Wanting More. Only a beige slat of sun above the horizon, like a shade pulled not quite down. Otherwise, clouds. Sea rippled here and there. Birds reluctant to fly. The mind wants a shaft of sun to stir the gray porridge of clouds, an osprey to stitch sea to sky with its barred wings, some dramatic music, a symphony, perhaps a Chinese gong. But the mind always wants more than it has. One more bright day of sun, one more clear night in bed with the moon, one more hour to get the words right, one more chance for the heart in hiding to emerge from its thicket in dried grasses, as if this quiet day with its tentative light weren't enough, as if joy weren't strewn all around. Such a joy to sit with you, and, you know, may your hearts know the joy that's strewn all around. I'll look forward to seeing you next week.